This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, Father David Bowman of the Catholic University of America. Tonight's subject, the work of the Second Vatican Council. You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Continuing our week-long look at the Second Vatican Council on Night Call, we have standing by in Washington, D.C., Father David Bowman, Assistant Professor in the Department of Religious Education at Catholic University of America. As a teacher of ecumenism, Father Bowman recently led a three-day retreat for 40 Protestant ministers at Loyola Retreat House in Maryland. Now, if you'd like to ask Father Bowman a question on tonight's topic, the work of the Second Vatican Council, or make a comment, give us a call here at Night Call. Our Night Call operators are on duty. Our lines are now open. Now, our number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Reverse the charges. Please make that call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. And our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Father Bowman, what is a Vatican Council?
Well, the second one is going on now, Russ. This is the fourth session of the Second Vatican Council. The first session was in 1962 and was called by Pope John, who was, of course, then alive. The First Vatican Council was called in 1869 and met in 1870 and disbanded, and that was the council which met there in Vatican City of bishops from all over the world, as this one is. The present Vatican Council, meeting in St. Peter's in Rome, is the largest numerically that has ever met. There are about 2,500 bishops from all over the world meeting there. They're gathered in a council to deliberate about the state of the Roman Catholic Church today and to decide on, or at least guide one another, as to some of the things that they think ought to be done, ought to be taught in these days to our community, our Catholic community, and some of the matters of witness that ought to be done for the whole world today.
Is the council run as a democratic organization? In the sense, does each bishop have a vote?
Yes, and they're using computers now for the first time so that the voting at least is tabulated a lot quicker. It is democratic in that sense that each bishop has one vote. There's no distinction in this regard between cardinals or archbishops or auxiliary bishops or any other kind.
How many men would be involved then in this council?
About 2,500 at the high points. Now, sometimes there are 2,200 that vote. Right now, it seems the number is closer to 1,600 or 1,700 because many of them left and went home during this week-long recess that they're having now.
How many American cardinals would be involved in this?
Well, there are five American cardinals. There are, I believe, around 250 American bishops who are involved in it.
Well, now, why did the Catholic Church, Father, feel the need for a council at this time?
Well, it's the first time a council has ever been called to discuss mainly the internal needs of the Church and not some external threat, such as a heresy which had become widespread, or a difficulty, some kind of at least interpreted attack against something that we believe is of faith. So Pope John called the council. He said afterward, in response to an inspiration of the Holy Spirit, and I think a lot of people would go along with this, he called it to open windows, was the metaphor Pope John used, in the church to let the fresh air of modern life and modern progress in where it's needed to come in. And the purpose of the council is reform of the Roman Church and renewal. Either word is proper.
Well, what are some of the reforms that the council has?
The first one they took up was the reform of the liturgy, and that, as you probably know, has become an ongoing thing in the Roman Church now, with the introduction of a good deal of the vernacular language, with some changes in regard to the functions of the celebrating priest, some of whose functions have now been taken over by laymen, with a closer, certainly, cooperation and participation of the whole worshiping community centered in the priest, with things like, say, the altar turned so that the priest can face the people and establish eye contact and personal contact much more than we used to be able to when each of us was facing its own wall.
Now, have all priests accepted this, or must they accept it?
Well, it's the general teaching of the Church, that is, the Constitution on the Liturgy, is now a common teaching of the bishops from all over the world. And since every priest in general will follow his bishop, or take very seriously what his bishop teaches him as Catholic doctrine, in general, all priests accept it. Some, I think, accept it a bit, in theory, or almost from afar, and kind of want to be shown exactly what changes the bishop insists that they make and what ones he leaves it up to them to make.
Now, the council obviously has given some note to the role of the layman in the Catholic Church. Do they play any role, that is, laymen, in the Vatican Council itself?
They do now. Well, they did even for the first one. They were surely consulted by the experts. When Pope John announced it, he announced commissions who would do preparatory work and draw up plans and documents which would express the various Catholic positions on matters like revelation, liturgy, the church is relevant to the world or in danger of being irrelevant. And these commissions surely did use the work of some laymen, but it wasn't very obvious. At the, I think, the first session, toward the end, Pope John did invite one layman to come to the council, a Frenchman, Jean Guiton, and he was there. Since then, quite a few laymen have been invited. The first man to speak at the council was an Irishman, Patrick Keegan. An American layman, James Norris, has addressed the council in regard to social help, international social aid program. And now there are, I think, quite a few, including Martin Work, who is the head of the National Council of Catholic Men, who are over there and attending all the sessions and in general getting all the material and being called in as consultants on the pertinent matters, such as the document on the apostolate or the life of the layman in the church today.
Father Bowman, you teach unity within the church, within Christendom, correct?
Right.
Do you feel that the Second Vatican Council will help the Christian churches of the world to unite?
Oh, yes. Well, to unite depends on what you mean by that, Russ. To get together organizationally in the foreseeable future, I don't think anybody can imagine this except by some great intervention of God, I suppose. We'd always have to leave him open to do things in his way and in his time. But within our time, to help toward a unity not only of spirit, which I think in large measure we already have, we Christians, but in a unity of friendship, of cooperation in both social matters and also in religious matters. In unity like this, the council has been a tremendous help already and will surely have set in motion an ecumenical movement toward unity that I don't think can possibly be stopped.
Our guest tonight, Father David Bowman, Assistant Professor of Religious Education at Catholic University of America. Our topic, the work of the Second Vatican Council. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine,
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Sometimes out on that limb without him. It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight is Father David Bowman, Assistant Professor of Religious Education at Catholic University of America. Our topic on Night Call, the work of the Second Vatican Council. And if you'd like to join us here on Night Call, or if you'd like to ask a question of Father David Bowman, here's your chance. Our Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. And if you get a busy signal, please do not become discouraged. Just hang up the phone and redial. Area code 313-846-6601. Father Bowman, I have a caller in Denver, Colorado now, a listener on KTLN, Mr. Jerry Thaler. Good evening, Jerry. Your comment, please.
All righty. I'd like to ask Father Bowman a few questions.
Yes, sir.
I would like to ask, Father, why should there have been any question about the innocence of the Jewish race as to the death of Jesus Christ? We do not even hold the second-generation Germans responsible for their crimes against the world. Why should there have been so many hundreds or thousands of years of penitence on the part of the Jews?
Father?
Yes, okay. I think the biblical problem is in St. John, his blood be upon us and upon our children, Jerry, and that has been misinterpreted by Christians frequently as an adequate biblical basis for their anti-Semitism, which is an unchristian thing. So I think they rationalized on it as can be done in regard to something like some of the segregation that has occurred in our country. So why was there any question of declaring them innocent? Well, Pope John, as you may remember, asked Cardinal Bea to do this during the council as an act of reparation to the Jewish people because of Hitlerian Germany and because of the terrible scandal of that persecution of the Jews. And Pope John asked the German Cardinal, Cardinal Bea, to lead the formulation of this document, which, by the way, is not a document which absolves the Jews of their guilt. This no human agent can do. Only God can do this. But the document declares to every Christian what is the Christian attitude toward our Jewish brethren, that no Christian may hide behind a misinterpretation of St. John in being guilty of anti-Semitism.
Jerry, you had another question.
Very briefly, could you tell me, Father, why there has been no American pope And what are the possibilities now? Is the door opened for non-Sibelius celibacy for future priests?
Well, first of all, and then why no American pope? Well, I think it's a matter of history, and there hasn't been anything but an Italian pope for 400 years. During that time, of course, our country came into existence. So there hasn't been an English pope or a Chinese pope or a Polish pope during all this time either. I think this situation may cease soon. There may be certainly a non-Italian pope elected. Whether they'd ever, or they will elect an American, would be up to, we believe, the working of God and the Spirit of God. About celibacy, in general, no, there isn't any open door toward a change in the regular discipline of celibacy for the Western Roman Church. We now, married men may be ordained deacons. This is in the document of the council.
What's the difference between a deacon and a priest, Father?
Well, a deacon, at least among us, may distribute Holy Communion. He may preach officially. He's an official preacher in the church. He is bound to celibacy and to the recitation of the divine office, but he may not say Mass or hear confessions would be the chief differences in him.
Have Catholic priests always practiced celibacy?
No. Well, presuming that I can presume that there were Catholic priests right from apostolic times on, if our callers would give me that, and of course that I would want the church to be historic and Catholic from the beginning. Celibacy was a discipline voluntarily accepted in the early church by very many who also functioned as priests. It became common in Spain, common enough so that a Council of Elvira in the 5th century, I believe, 4th or 5th, declared it necessary in Spain, and gradually it became the accustomed discipline in the whole Western Church.
What if a man is married and then decides to enter the priesthood? Could he?
Well, if his wife dies and his children are provided for, sure. There are some rare cases in history where both the husband and the wife decided to enter religion, or the wife to become a nun and the husband to become a priest, and this has happened too. But it would be, of course, a very unusual circumstance.
Jerry, you had some further comments.
No, and I want to thank Father Bowman for the opportunity he has spoken to
him. Sure, thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry, for calling Night Call. Mr. Jerry Thaler, a listener from Denver, Colorado, listener on KTLN. Very interesting questions Jerry had.
Yes.
Let's go now out to Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL, Mr. Nick Caparinolo. Good evening, Nick. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
I have one question for Father Bowman. I'd like to know, are they going to do anything about the birth control situation in the council?
Father?
Anything about birth control?
Yes.
Well, this is still up for grabs, Nick, as far as I know. The subject has come up in the discussion on what is called Schema 13, the document about the church in the world. A year ago, some of the cardinals got quite frank about this. Cardinal Leger of Canada and Sunens of Belgium especially, and then Maxima Sai of Syria. And they were calling for a rather complete rethinking of the church's understanding of the sacrament of marriage and the state of married life, with at least an openness to the new developments, scientific developments of the last 20, 30 years in regard to control of birth and the corresponding thing for married people, responsible parenthood. Now, they did speak quite frankly and strongly a year ago. This year, when they came to this matter in the document, as they began to discuss it again, if you remember, about a week ago, Pope Paul sent a letter over asking them not, or at least expressing his preference, that they not discuss this matter publicly on the floor of the council, that if anyone who wanted to write out what he thought uncertain and unknown as to whether there will be any official declaration before they break up. Some of the cardinals and bishops have strongly urged the Pope to either give them a decision or a directive on it or enable them with him to give it. And some have been quoted at any rate, and you know, here you have the trouble about the sources. Some have been quoted as saying they don't want to go home without some answer to give to their people.
Nick?
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, in part. I'd also like to ask Father Brother one other question.
Go right ahead, Nick.
Father, I have three children, and recently we moved into the county of Baltimore County, and I found that I could only get one of my boys into a Catholic school. I inquired at the school where they had been attending, and they said that they couldn't go there because it was too far away, and the school that they were in, the parish that they were at, they couldn't take them because they were too crowded. What are we supposed to do with our children?
I'd say put them in the nearest public school, or wherever they can get a good education, which presumably would be in your public school, and see to their religious education as you can, Nick. Wouldn't this be the normal thing to do in such a situation?
Well, yes, it would. It's just such a shame that it's my oldest boy involved.
Yeah.
He was so happy with Catholic school, and
sure,
it was such a drastic change to go to public school.
It's drastic, I think, only if you would really almost leave it seem to be drastic to him. You know, he'll have good teachers there. He'll have small classes. He'll have a lot of playmates, many of whom will be Roman Catholics. So I think if you could make it not seem to be such a terrible, change, as if there is very little similar in the new school, it would be a big help to the boy. And you could do this. Part of our problem with the Catholic school system is, of course, lack of room. Only half of the grammar school children are in Catholic schools now over the country. And when I was a boy, the pastor used to thunder about parents, that parents were not allowed to let their children go to a public school. Now they're kind of pleading for half the people to please take your children to public school. So the wheel has swung around a long way.
Did the council discuss education in general?
They have a document on education with which is not finished yet. They are strongly recommending religious education and general education, but under religious auspices. But I think their thinking represents pretty much what I interpret to be the thinking in America today, that the state may help with public functions of the school, not with the religious, certainly not with the religious instruction or directly religious activities of any school, but that there may be some state funds provided for health services and safety, and perhaps for labs and non-religious subjects is being done, or at least is tentative in our country today, I believe.
Nick, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thanks a lot, and Father Berman has given me some rather good advice, and I'll try to follow it.
Well, Nick, be sure you look up a good CCD program for the religious instruction of your children. You'll be able to find it in Baltimore. Try the Mission Handmaids of the Sacred Heart. Okay?
Pardon?
Try the Mission Helpers of the Sacred Heart. They are very good in religious education, and they're in the Baltimore area.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Nick.
Good
night. Gentlemen from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL.
Our guest tonight is Father David Bowman, Assistant Professor of Religious Education, Catholic University of America. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number,
313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be.
Proceeding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, Night People. My name is Gibb, and our guest tonight on Night Call, Father David Bowman, Assistant Professor of Religious Education at Catholic University of America, which I understand is in Washington, D.C. Our topic tonight on Night Call is the work of the Second Vatican Council. And if you'd like to ask Father Bowman a question or make a comment about the Second Vatican Council, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, you may call us by dialing 313-84-666-01. You may dial us direct if you wish, and you may also make that call collect. Reverse the charges. Our Night Call number, area code 313-84-666-01. And we invite you to join us here on Night Call. We like to hear your opinions and your comments. Area code 313-84-666-01. Father Bowman, I have a caller out in Denver, Colorado now. A listener on KTLN, a good friend of Night Call, Mr. Dave Adams. Good evening, Dave. You're on Night Call.
Good evening, Mr. Gibbs, and good evening, Father, and good evening, Night People. I have several questions I would like to direct to the Father. Have you heard about the new care or the new dress of the nuns, of the Catholic nuns, or does the Vatican Council determine the dress? I understand there's supposed to be a change in the dress.
Well, for some time, many of the nuns' communities have been discussing this and consulting with fashion experts, and this is very much approved and has been for 15 years by directives from the Holy Father. So the council, I think, has just repeated publicly what they've known for quite a while. A manner in which they've been working.
David? Will there be a change in the dress of the fathers then?
Well, in Europe, they've already changed in some countries, in some places, from wearing the cassock in the city to wearing a black suit, such as American priests and ministers wear, many ministers in this country. There's some discussion of changing from a black suit to something else, and from the Roman collar. In some countries of Europe, the priests wear, or at least teachers, professors, wear a white shirt with a black tie.
Can you make this statement? I don't know how much you can talk, you know, but how do you feel personally? Do you think any church has the right to tell an individual family how many children they can have or cannot have? Do you think the church is out of line by this birth control or non-birth control or vice versa, whichever way you want to call it?
Father, before you answer that, can I explain to our audience that you are a Jesuit, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think that's revealing because most of the Jesuits that I've ever met have pretty strong opinions. And they do speak out.
Well, in that regard, sure. I would at least want, David, I'd want to split that into at least two questions. Do I feel how many children they are to have. No, and I don't think anybody can tell them that, including themselves, with any degree of certainty. As I would say, only God knows how many children any couple is going to have. I don't know of any church that has ever tried to tell couples how many children they are to have.
Maybe I should have rephrased it. I think the church's stand is that they're saying that they shouldn't have these birth pills, these contraceptives to keep them from having children. I think that is a...
Sure. Well, then I hope you see that's a bit of a different question, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, well, what I meant to say in the first place.
I suppose it would be obvious, or I have to be honest, yes, I think a church does have a right to express an opinion about this for the members of the church. Yes, I do.
Because one other question I have. I went to church here recently, and they, they give out these little letters, from the church, the priest made a remark that so many Catholics now, when they say their rosary and say their different prayers, that they just more or less utter them, and they don't, they learn them by heart, and
mm-hmm.
they don't say them too much with, reverence and
sure.
with, like they should, and it, he felt that they should be a little more reverent when they prayed, and,
yeah.
Well,
we're all for that.
Instead of just chanting it off, and I was wondering if this would possibly be just on a local level, or whether the Vatican has made some remarks as to this.
Well, the document on the liturgy would be the, I suppose, the pertinent thing. Prayer is a problem with all of us, isn't it?
Yes,
and
it is.
So that we're not just going through motions, and we Catholics are like anybody else in this regard. You can get used to a way of praying and use words that really don't express an interior faith or hope or love. And that's what we're warned against.
There's just one other question that just popped in my mind. I'm married to a Catholic. I'm not a Catholic, and I like to know, try to understand the religion. Could you explain to me when Jesus said to Peter, "Upon this rock I'll build my church," was he referring, in your opinion, to a physical rock, or was he referring to the qualities of Peter?
Well, to both, I would say. I don't see that we need to have a dilemma there, David. It seems to me that, at least from the study of that text which I've done, that the rock certainly referred to Peter, and in Israel, the rock was always Yahweh. If you read the Psalms again and the prophets, you'll find in Israel, the rock was God, their God. So, and this, I think, was the first time any man had been named the Rock Man. And it is unusual. So it still isn't clear from the text alone just what that means or all of its ramifications. But
I just didn't understand it, because I know Peter denied Christ three times. And, of course, he, was forgiven. And I was
sure.
just wondering, because there's so much controversy over this, with people. And
there's a wonderful book by a man named Kuhlman, Oscar Kuhlman, who's an evangelical preacher, not a Roman Catholic, called Peter. And I'd suggest you enjoy that, or you'd get a lot out of it. It's by a man, Kuhlman, Oscar Kuhlman.
Right.
The name of it is Peter. It's a Meridian book. It's out in paperback.
Right. Well, I sure enjoyed talking to you, Father, and thanks a lot.
Thank you for calling. Night call, David.
Good night.
Good night. Mr. Dave Adams from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLM. Father, Dave brought up a point while he was talking to you. We are now going to be using a common Bible. Is that correct?
Well, we may, yes, and I hope we will.
Through the Second Vatican Council.
Well, not quite. The Revised Standard Version, which is the King James Version revised, is now out, or is coming out, in a Roman Catholic edition. So, and this has been done, certainly outside of the council's work.
I see.
With certainly with approval of our bishops, and it's published now. The New Testament is out, published by the Liturgical Press at St. John's College, Minnesota.
The Bible that Catholics use and the Bible that Protestants use, is it basically a question of semantics, words?
Most of the changes were most of the differences in our translations have been a question of texts, different Greek texts or Hebrew texts from which they've been done.
We have a caller in Torrington, Wyoming, a listener on KGOS, Mr. Marion Hickson. Good evening, Marion. Speak right up, sir. You're on night call.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Your comment, please. You're on night call, Mr.
Hello?
Hickson.
Hello, Mr. Nixon?
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Well, he's having difficulty hearing us. Will you have Mr. Hickson replace that call, please? And let's go now to Baltimore, Maryland. Mr. Walter Ford, a listener on WBAL. Hello, Walter. Speak right up. You're on night call. Hello, Mr. Ford?
Yes?
You're on night call, sir. Your comment.
Hello. I'd like to ask Father Bowman a couple of questions.
Go right ahead.
I'm wondering about the Second Vatican Council's attitude toward the growing tendency toward atheism in this country. We here in Maryland have been involved in several court decisions, one recently here in our Court of Appeals, where jurors were found to be erroneous in swearing that a belief in God. I'd like to ask the Father what his opinion is on this growing tendency toward atheism in this country, and what his opinion is and his information is toward the attitude of the Second Vatican in this matter.
Father?
Well, I don't think we could say that Second Vatican has an attitude directly toward, say, the problem in America of a thing like the requirement for jurors to take an oath that they believe in God. It would only be, I suppose, background and pertinent as an application in America. Of course, all religious people are opposed, that is, opposed to atheism, religion in the sense of a belief in God identified as such. I don't know, though, that I would identify this as an instance of growing atheism in America. As I understand that decision, and I don't claim to understand it fully, they simply said that it's unconstitutional in the state of Maryland for a demand to be made of jurors that they profess belief in God in order to act as jurors in our court system. And that's certainly not any declaration of atheism. So I at least wouldn't interpret the decision as an indication of growing atheism in our country. I might not agree with it.
I'd like to ask you...
Go ahead, Walter.
Well, Father, we've had this decision from the Supreme Court in reference to prayer in the schools in our state, too.
Yeah.
And it just seems to be a growing movement in our state towards complete anti-religion. And the people here are in serious doubt about the stability of their beliefs.
The stability of their what, Walter?
For instance, how could a juror be relied upon to deliver an honest decision if he couldn't swear to a belief in God?
Well, suppose he believes in man and in the integrity of man and in the worth of the individual human being, in the worth of truth and the necessity of bearing witness to truth in his life. I mean, I think he can be relied on, can't he, to tell the truth and to make a true judgment in as much as he can. You and I know a lot of people who say they believe in God that we wouldn't trust in the backyard, you know. Don't we? I mean, you know, just to say we believe in God, Walter, isn't quite enough. And I think you'd have to examine every man and see, let him prove himself by his deeds.
How can a witness or a juror be relied upon as giving an absolute decision if he doesn't fear any retribution if he was acting falsely.
Well, I doubt that any juror is called on to give any absolute decision, is he, in that sense? And secondly, do you remember Mr. Reeb, who was killed in Selma, a Unitarian minister? He talked in my class here at Catholic University while he was working here in Washington, and he publicly declared that he was an agnostic as far as God was concerned. But he was giving his whole life to the alleviation of evil, where he found it in the inner city and among the poorest of God's poor. And I'd say a man like that I would go all the way with as far as admiring him and taking his word for true, although publicly Jim Reeb, at least at that time of his life, could not say that he believed in God.
Walter, our time's just about up. We have to take our station break. I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
I'll ask one more thing, God.
We don't have time right now, Walter. I'm sorry. I want to thank you for calling Night Call. Mr. Walter Ford from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL.
Our guest tonight is Father David Bowman, Assistant Professor of Religious Education, Catholic University of America. Our topic, the work of the Second Vatican Council. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America, busy making money, busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line?
But it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. This is Gibb, and our guest tonight is Father David Bowman, Assistant Professor of Religious Education at Catholic University of America. Our topic, the work of the Second Vatican Council. And if you have a comment on the Second Vatican Council, or you'd like to ask the Father a question, give us a call here at area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere, collect. Please make that call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. Our lines are now open, and we invite you to join us here at Night Call. Father, Mr. Ford brought up a topic that you wanted to address yourself to, and I believe that was prayers.
If I could, just for a moment, though I've been talking too much.
No, you've been. That's what you're here for, Father.
Well, this business about the Supreme Court decision about the prayer, the New York Regents' Prayer, so-called, I think has to be carefully understood. And again, in our society, there isn't any simple answer on the place of religion in our public life, not in the way we have it now. We have a very friendly attitude toward religion in this country, but that doesn't mean that public religious exercises need to be inserted in, say, all or most or perhaps even any of our simply governmental activities. And our schools are public activities as we understand them. So at least as I understand that decision, it said that no public authority can make up a prayer which the children in a public school then must say or I don't know about must, and so that so much pressure would be brought on them that they practically have to say it.
Father,
Father, are you saying that the decision on prayers is not really that the Supreme Court may not be a godless decision then?
Yeah, that's right.
In other words, you're in agreement with the court's decision.
On that one, yes. Frankly, they puzzle me. I think they've done a flip-flop since the late 40s on the whole matter, and maybe it's all being resolved in terms of this last education bill, and there seems to be a growing consensus in this country that you can have, say, some cooperation between, say, religious schools, at any rate, and the public welfare so that they would be recognized as performing a public function.
Father,
to be working out.
You recall we had Mr. Marion Hickson, and we couldn't hear him well enough. We've got him back on the line. He's out in Torrington, Wyoming, a listener on KGOS. And hello, Mr. Hickson, and welcome again to Night Call, sir.
Yes.
Your comment, please.
Well, I'd like to make a comment that I'm very grateful to Pope John for breaking down so many of the barriers between Protestant and Catholic. I suppose he's done more to promote ecumenicity, or did more to promote ecumenicity, than about any other man. I'd like to ask Father Bowman two or three questions. I'd like to ask, first of all, what the position of the council is now in regards to the witness of the layman in the Catholic Church in this world.
Father?
Well, the document on the church, which was the second one promulgated, takes this up, at least in general. And the witness of the layman in general would be within, say, the saeculum, the secular city and the secular world. It would be to bring the principles of Christ into his daily life and among, therefore, people in a milieu that, say, the professionally religious people like priests and nuns and brothers and ministers simply cannot reach. Now, the council is going to make this more detailed and issue a document which will be completely on the witness of the layman. That is being worked on now. There are laymen who are helping to write it, but it isn't out yet.
Mr. Hickson, you had another question.
Technically, to witness is to witness to something within one's own experience. And I was wondering what the position of the Catholic Church is now on the witness of a person who has had the experience of the reality of God through the Holy Spirit. Thinking, for instance, of St. Paul's statement about the witness, his witness, the witness of the Spirit to our spirit.
Well, I think that there have been lay people who have surely experienced God in a wondrous way all through the history of the church and the churches. And I hope that the Roman Catholic Church is just as receptive and appreciative of such laymen, inspirited men, now as we hope the church always has been. I'm not quite sure if I'm meeting your question, though, Marion. If you're asking, will the charismatic element in the church, or the pneumatic, the spiritual, inspired element in laymen or any other churchmen be, say, freer to operate, or at least heard more easily now that the council has met? I'd say yes, by all means.
Marion, did the father answer your question?
Well, for instance, in Alcoholics Anonymous, the witness of one alcoholic to another is what God has done for him, a power greater than himself.
Uh-huh.
It does seem to me that when we're talking about a Christian witness, we're always talking about some way that God has helped us in a real way.
Uh-huh.
I would ask another question, though. I'd like to ask the Father, I believe this is true, I believe the Catholic Church has a new policy on the layman's reading of the Bible. Aren't they being encouraged to read the Bible much more than in a past generation?
Yes, much more surely than 50 years ago. And I suppose we'd have to put it at, I'm not sure where, Pope Leo XIII, who was around in the 1890s, certainly strongly urged the reading of the Bible for our lay people. But that was, I think we must admit, a rather large change in policy, even at that late date. Now our people are surely encouraged to read and understand and study the Bible more and more, I suppose it would be proper to say, as much as our separated brethren have been doing.
Mr. Hickson, we have another caller waiting on the line. I want to thank you for calling Night Call. Good night, sir. Mr. Marion Hickson, listener from Torrington, Wyoming, a listener on KGOS. And we have about a minute and a half for Mr. Bill Phillips, listening in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, a listener on WBAL. Hello, Bill.
Yes.
Your comment, please.
My comment? Let me ask Father Bowen, how come all of a sudden now in the last 2 years we have had all this talk about the council?
Father?
All this talk, Bill?
I beg your pardon?
How come we've had all this talk?
Well,
I mean, the council's been meeting the last three.
The council came up.
Why did it come up? Well, Pope John, I think, due to an inspired decision, called it. And until then, nobody had really envisioned a council. That was in 1959, I believe,
59.
Or 58. So it was due to Pope John that this has happened.
Father, we're just about finished with our time here on Night Call tonight. Bill, I don't have any further time. I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right.
I want to thank you for calling Night Call. Mr. Bill Phillips from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, a listener on WBAL. Father David Bowman, thank you for being our guest on Night Call. We certainly enjoyed having you here, and it's certainly been very informative.
Father David Bowman was our guest tonight. He's the Assistant Professor of Religious Education at Catholic University of America. Our topic tonight was the work of the Second Vatican Council, part of a week-long look at the Second Vatican Council. And continuing our look at the Second Vatican Council, we have as our Night Call guest tomorrow the Reverend Dr. C. Stanley Lowell, editor of Church and State. Our topic, What the Vatican Council Did Not Do. Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck. And Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.